The Flatus Show is brought to you by Testosterone, building stronger bodies every day.
This podcast is a proud member of the Network of One Podcast. And also the Freak Network at thefreaknetwork.com.
On today's Bill of the Flatus Show, episode 140, Fishing, Wonder Cake, Evangelical Progressives, and Anastasia. All of this and more. The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Welcome, kids. Welcome to another episode of the Flatus Show. How are you kids doing this week? I was doing fine. I'm your host, Kenty, and Jose, my co-host, is on the studio couch, and we have a special co-host today, Melisande, the cockatiel. So she'll be chirping in. We have two co-hosts today. So let's see what's going on today. Last week I talked about plagiarism, right? About that woman. And then I started telling a story about going to the library, and I didn't tell you why there's a reason I started telling you that story. I'm gonna have to take off my sweater here. I'm very hot. There's a reason why I had to tell you that story, because it fit in with the plagiarism. It had nothing to do with what I actually started to talk about. But anyway, the reason why is I was looking at these books on how to write winning letters to get into schools, right? So there were these two books, you know, in libraries, you know, you could go to a shelf and you'll find a book that was published in 1964, and then another one 1980, and then, you know, maybe a new one, right? So there was this book from, like, 1980s, and then there was this book from, like, a newer book. It was 1992 or whatever. So I'm reading I read the one from 1980, and looking at all the examples, because what they would do, they would have the real letters that won, that people were accepted, that that won a person's acceptance into the college, okay? Names are changed. So I'm reading the new one in 1992. It's a different publisher, different author, or different, you know, the person who compiled it, right? All different. And I'm reading the letters, and there is a letter which is clearly plagiarized from the one that's in the 1980 book. So it was like this guy was saying how he has an unconventional life, and that he would rather be kidnapped by bikers than, you know, play polo. And this person used the same letter to get into college, right? This winning letter. Well, you know, it wasn't the same exact letter, because it was different, you know, it was a person, you know, I went back and I thought, well, maybe they used the same person. No. The person from 1980 was like, you know, Roy Smith going to Connecticut, University of Connecticut. This other guy wasn't even a guy, it was a girl, wrote this to get into the University of San Francisco or someplace in California. She stole the letter. She stole the whole thing. She plagiarized. She gets into college, and who knows what happened to her. I mean, maybe she became the editor of that newspaper. But it just pisses me off. It was like right there, blatant. And it was by chance, right? Their books were right next to each other. But hadn't any other person noticed this before? I mean, what about the people who read these letters and accept kids into colleges? Don't they read these books? I mean, you know, I don't know. Just pisses me off. Pisses me off, Sharita. Because I beat myself up too much. You know, I'm thinking, well, these people are fucking cheating and getting ahead in life. I'm not going to cheat to get ahead in life, but, you know, when I find out that you're cheating, honey, I'm going to hobble you. I'm taking you down like a hyena. You better watch out for Kenty, because if I find out that you've cheated in your life, you'll have the wrath of God on you. I'll go all biblical on your ass. Okay? Don't cheat. Really pisses off Kenty. Okay? So anyway, the other day, which could have been several months ago, Joe G told me about a podcast. Actually, he didn't tell me about the podcast, but I found it on his website. He never told me about it. I don't know why. You know, I had to go and look on his webpage to find it. It's called Point of Inquiry. And it's a podcast that is from a secular humanist bent, atheist, secular humanist. And I wanted to listen to it because, you know, I'm interested in secular humanism, right? I consider myself secular humanist as well as Unitarian Christian. You know, I'm a secular humanist who believes in God, but I don't necessarily believe the same in the way, I don't know. I believe in both, okay? So, what the hell is this software update? I don't need this right now. I'm recording. Okay. So, Point of Inquiry. I listened to a few episodes of it, and I still listen to it. Comes out once a week. But even when I was listening to it for the first few times, I thought to myself, this sounds like Jan Markell's religious program, only it's secular humanism and atheism. It really rang to me like, this is like the left's version of fundamentalist radio, right? Now, I listened to those crazy people like Jan Markell, and I know Joe G was concerned because I had stopped listening to it for a while, but I have since gone back to listen to them because I wanted to see where they're heading, what they're talking about. That's the same crap they always talk about. But it really, what it does is it solidifies my own position when I listen to these things. Even the secular humanist one. I mean, I thought to myself, well, yeah, I'm more of a secular humanist than you know, I don't know who I'd get along with. I'd get along with you, right? But not to put people into you know, spots, you know. I mean, I don't believe that. I mean, everybody has free will and, you know, they can do what they want. But so I got the impression that this was like that, all right? That Point of Inquiry is the same as Jan Markell in many ways. So the guy on Point of Inquiry interviewed Chris Hedges. He has a book called I Don't Believe in Atheists. And he talked about how the new atheists are as bad as the fundamentalist Christians and how racist they are. And he really had some really interesting points in his argument. And the guy who – I forget the guy's name, the host, DJ whatever – of Point of Inquiry, he's really grilling Chris Hedges, you know, and almost, you know, more than any other guest he's had on there, you know, and Chris Hedges stood up and, you know, answered his questions. He was good. He was really good. And I kind of liked him. So I bought his book called I Don't Believe in Atheists. It's a short book. I mean, it's small. It's nice to carry. And can you hold on for a second? Johnny left the tea water to boil, and he went away. But anyway, the new atheists are like the fundamentalists. I mean, I didn't realize it, but, like, who are some of those new atheists? Like Dawkins and who's the other one? He has a cute name, but he apparently is really, really racist, or allegedly, according to Chris Hedges. But they're like neoconservatives. So it's like the new atheists and the fundamentalists are both on the same page in a way politically. Isn't that interesting? So watch out where fascism is taking you, you know, who the fascists are taking over. They're taking over both camps. You see, you think that they're different, right? You think the atheists and fundamentalists are different, but they aren't, right? They aren't. They have the same mindset, apparently, so, or can. So anyway, read Chris Hedges' book, I Don't Believe in Atheists. I like him. I was curious. I'd be curious to listen to hear what Joe G has to say about Chris Hedges. Okay, the Grolier Bookshop, I was going to talk about this last week, and I didn't. Grolier Bookshop is in Harvard Square. It was established in 1927. It's under new management now. It was bought out last year. The person who owned it had sold it. It's the only bookshop I know of, on the East Coast at least, which is just poetry. And it's been around since 1927. I know probably in San Francisco there are poetry shops which sell just poetry. I'm thinking of, what's his face, New Directions. But the Grolier Bookshop is this nice little bookshop. I was talking to the owner the other day, and he's a nice gentleman. He was thinking about writing a book about poetry and film, how film can be poetic. And we were talking about Herman Melville. I was looking for Herman Melville poetry. And he said, yeah, he wrote some. And then he said, you know, people said that, you know, when you read Melville, it's like reading poetry. And I said, you know, I realized that before because I have a podcast. I told him about the podcast. So if you're listening, I don't have your card here. Hi, how you doing, Mr. Grolier? His name's not Mr. Grolier, but, you know, for purposes of the podcast, Mr. Grolier, Grolier Bookshop. He has another name. But anyway, I read, you know, Moby Dick. Remember I read a passages of Moby Dick, and it reads like poetry. And I said to him, I said, well, you know, sometimes you don't realize something is poetic until you actually read it out loud, you know? I mean, I've read newspaper articles where it was like almost like poetry, you know? It was, you know, very close. I mean, with some editing, it could be real poetry, you know? And that's just a written newspaper. Yawn. Sorry. Okay, another podcast I'm listening to Unitarian podcast. I really am finding a kinship to them. Three which I recommend are the All Souls Unitarian Church. I think that's from New York City. There's a Unitarian church in Salem, Oregon, and then there's the First Unitarian Universalist Church of San Francisco. I love the ministers who their sermons, and they're refreshing. They fill my soul with good things. You know, it's a spiritually cleansing. Okay, so I recommend these podcasts to my listeners who are looking for spiritual guidance. Okay, I recommend them highly. The Unitarian podcast. I should have their links. I should put links to the Unitarian podcasts I listen to on my webpage, which I'll do. I'll try to do that. So, anyway, is there any... Oh, the phone calls. How could I forget the phone calls? Okay, here are the phone calls.
Kenty, you were talking about being able to eat nuts to get your protein. And something else that comes out of nuts, human nuts, is sperm. And I've heard that there's a lot of protein in that. Is that true? Could I get all my protein source from sperm and sucking cock? Like I could set up a little glory hole in my house, just so I could get my needed amount of protein from sucking cocks and getting sperm injected into my throat and down into my stomach. We have to really look into this. Is sperm a viable option for nuts and meat? Thank you. Bye.
Good morning. I'm calling to inquire if you give riding lessons at all. My granddaughter will be here for the summer, and she's been riding for 3 years, and she would love to be able to. And she's also interested in mucking stalls and things like that. If you would give me a call, my name is Marjorie, 281-1919-4819-1978-19. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Big Brother Big Sister calling you. We're going to have a truck in Rockport next Friday, April 11th. Would you have any clothing, small resealable household items we could pick up? If you do, please give us a call back at 1-800-483-5483-503.
Donna, Mom, maybe you have the fax on. I just thought of something I've been meaning to ask you. Did you ever send Aunt Betty a thank you for that check that you got? Hopefully you did, because I'm kind of embarrassed to even ask her if she got it. So let's just keep me posted. Thank you.
The area for people who would like to work from home. If you would like to receive free information, please press 1. If not, please press 2 to hang up.
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Mind you that today is election day in our... Hello, fellow Rockporters. I'm calling to remind you that today is election day in our great town, and that in addition to the debt exclusion that's on the ballot, we've also got a great candidate for school committee by the name of Jonathan Ring. Jonathan is focused on updating our classroom technology with smart boards, ensuring we prudently use our school choice funds on our children instead of on our administration, and making sure our science and technology curriculums are on par with math and reading. Polls are open until 8 p.m. today, so don't forget to go out and cast your ballot for Jonathan Ring.
Hi, Kenty. It's Calvin. I just called, you know, your husband. What was it? I know you are the number one wife. As for the law of Sarah, it's something that's mentioned in the Doctrine and Covenants, which is sort of a compendium of modern Mormon revelation, but I don't really know the specifics about it. Sorry about that. I don't know. Anyway, and I've really enjoyed all these sort of exercise talks. I've unfortunately been finagled into weightlifting from a very early age, since I was doing, football. And my older brothers had us some... Well, they would take me along and show me all these exercises, and I just have too many things to choose from, it feels like. My brother was a personal trainer, and he was always like, oh, why don't I show you this? Why don't I show you that? And it almost becomes, it seems stifling, because I'm like, well, how many chest exercises am I supposed to do? 7? 8? Or should I just do 3? And things like that. And I much prefer free weights as well. I'm not very keen on the machines for the most part. And, I love squats. It's very sad that you don't have a squat rack in your gym. They're just fantastic. But when I do it, I get really, really rank butt sweat. So, I have to be careful. Anyway, loving the show. Talk to you later. Bye.
Isn't that interesting? So, Zillafag, okay, let's answer Zillafag first. Zillafag, yes, it is true that semen has mostly protein, and apparently the average ejaculate that a man ejaculates is 15 calories worth of protein. I mean, 15 calories, and most of that is protein. So let's assume that's 100% protein, okay? If you have a 2,600 calorie diet, right, if you're bodybuilding and you need 2,600 calories a day, which is possible, you should have 40% of that calorie, of the calories should be protein, okay? That's 1,040 calories of protein. So if the average, the ejaculation, average ejaculate is 15 calories, you need to suck off 69 guys, give or take a few, depending on, you know, how much, how big their load is. So, yes, you could do it, but I think your mouth would be tired. Okay, so then I got those, I keep on getting these weird phone calls on my home phone. The riding lessons, big brother, big sister, Aunt Betty. Okay, let's see. Aunt Betty, did you send the thank you check? Thank you for the check to Aunt Betty. Aunt Betty, they thank you. They really do. Okay. If Aunt Betty is listening. Work from home. Jonathan Ring. Okay, for Jonathan Ring, that's the last thing. That was a phone bank call I got. There was elections for the school board and selectmen. Jonathan Ring was running for the school board. He belongs to one of these Focus on the Family groups in Cape Ann. And, you know, he's anti-homosexual. He believes the Earth is 6,000 years old. I think he probably does, but maybe not. You know, that's not a bad thing, right? But his thing was to change science to make it, you know, on par with math and reading or whatever. He probably allegedly wants to get rid of evolution. Right, and have creationism in our schools. This really bothers me. I didn't even know he was running. Actually, somebody told me about him the day before the election. Said, "Don't vote for him," and I asked why, and I couldn't believe it. And then when I got this phone call from him, the bank, right, the phone bank, I thought he has some money behind him, and I'm wondering if these groups like Focus on the Family pool their money to get these people elected in small places. Like, where are they getting their money to get a phone bank? He had so many like cards, like those posters in around town too. It's just a school board election, and as all this money is pumped into it, you know, he didn't win. He didn't get the seat. But it bothers me. You know, isn't there rules against that? Like, where you can get the money for this sort of thing? It's probably rigged. I mean, apparently, you know, Mike Huckabee, keep an eye on Mike Huckabee still, because on his website, I get his email. I sign up for his email. He's like, we are going to find people who will have strong conservative values and get them elected, you know, all over the country. There's like this search for people. And I'm thinking of Ring as, you know, probably one of them, you know. I'm thinking it's allegedly, okay. You know, whatever. But this, you know, it's not right. You know, it's not right that, you know, I shouldn't say evangelical, but this fundamentalist cash from where buttfuck Southland is coming to, you know, try to, you know, put people into, you know, power around here. Of course, we're responsible for voting people in, right? But, you know, doesn't that just piss you off? I mean, you know what? Democracy is never easy. You always have to be on your guard, right? And I guess that's the way to think of it. You really have to know who you're voting in, even in a school board. And I talked about this before. You have to be careful of these cocksuckers, you know? Or the next thing you know, they'll be burning you at the stake. And they laugh, you know. The gay agenda, gay agenda. I'm still leader of the gay agenda, okay? So, you know, if you want to talk to me about it, you know, go ahead. Okay, Calvin, thanks for trying to tell me about the Doctrines and Covenants. I won't grill you any more on that. The Exercise Talk, thanks. I enjoy it too. I didn't know you were had played football. I'm so impressed. I never played football. I mean, I was sort of ran away from it. So I'm impressed that you played it. The fact that your brother was a personal trainer and showed you all that stuff, I think, is really good. I mean, you know, what you do, well, I already talk about this later on, but, you know, you might know 7 exercises for a body part, but when you're exercising, you'll do 3 exercises. But it's good to rotate the exercises around to get your muscle to have all the different variations. So, with that, on with the show.
For rainy days, she says, but every time it rains, she spends what she puts away. She knows her proverbs A to Z and knows the good they bring.
But when she has to follow them,
well, that's another thing. Oh, little Audrey says, while the sun is out, make hay. Though she's not immense, there's a lot of sense in what little Audrey has to say.
One day, little Audrey was walking through the dark forest, listening to the birds, looking at the new growth coming up in the spring, ferns, beautiful little forest flowers, enjoying the way the light shone on the trees in the early morning, when suddenly a coyote appeared out of the woods, and little Audrey knew that the coyote was going to attack her because coyote was very hungry, and little Audrey knew that this was her last moment. But little Audrey just laughed and laughed because little Audrey knew that humans don't taste very good.
Anastasia, tell me who you are. Are you some star? Anastasia, are you what you seem? Do your sad eyes remember a dream? Why do you tremble and why do you sigh? As lonely as I, do you remember when summer has flown? Another world, a world that is yours alone, Anastasia. Smile away the past, Anastasia. Spring is here at last. Beautiful stranger, step down from your star. I only know I love you so. Whoever you are. Mother's Day. So, kids, today is Mother's Day. Try to get here, finagle a better position. Hold on. How's that? How's that? Is that better? It's better for me. Hope it wasn't too loud. I can see the screen. I'm moving things around. I know it's horrible, isn't it? But anyway. Mother's Day. Today's Mother's Day. Holidays generally depress me, okay? Today we went out with, John and I, and John's sister. We took his mother out, Gilly. And I talked to my mother. And I was gonna, talk about Mother's Day, about my mother. I don't really talk about my family too much. I mean, I guess I talk about my childhood. I would have to say my childhood was very unusual. My father was, still is, an alcoholic, and kind of crazy, and my mother was depressed, and it was a really strange childhood. It was, we didn't really have a four, I didn't have, would not have a normal childhood. And, I mean, nothing is ever normal, but I'm talking about the stability that, I'm not even going to say most people have, because I'm not really sure how most people live. But I had very little stability in my childhood. And because of my parents' behavior and the way they did things, I felt responsible for a lot of stuff, even though I was not responsible. And I know that. But when you're living in an environment, an unstable, crazy environment, you have to sort of like learn how to adapt. You have to learn how to survive. So when I think of Mother's Day, this is not to say my childhood was horrible, but it was different from probably what, most people consider their childhood. Most children have parents. I shouldn't say most children, because again, I really don't know what most children have. But I didn't have parents who I didn't feel secure much in my family. With my father, he was often delinquent with bills, and bill collectors would come not pouncing on the door. And my mother was afraid to let us out. She was afraid we were going to be stolen away. I don't know if my father was involved with any kind of criminal activity or not. He gambled a lot. I don't want to make it sound like Italian people are mafias people, but he did hang out with this Italian guy who was very rich, and it was sort of shady, And he gambled, And my father, he was a self-employed landscaper. He spent more money on gambling and liquor than he did on the house. Our house eventually fell apart. Literally. There was holes in the roof before it was finally taken over, and my parents were forced to sell it to pay taxes and stuff. And the inside of the house, after my sister was born, my mother was depressed. She stopped cleaning. And now she would clean the dishes and stuff like that. But there was clutter all over the place. When we went to the supermarket, there's brown paper bags. She'd come home. We'd line them up in the dining room. And they just stayed there, And eventually, she'd throw some away. But we'd have papers, newspapers. We'd get the newspapers. Piles of newspapers. There were like paths in my house, okay? It was really hard to believe. And I talk about it. I'm sure you'll be like, you're thinking, oh, my God. But it's true. like I was saying, when I was in high school, that's when everything was falling apart. We had no electricity, we had no hot water, we had our gas stove. After electricity went off, my parent and we had no hot water heater. Okay, the hot water heater was gas, but it had broken. We had to heat up the hot water in these galvanized pans. It was like Little House on the Prairie, but in the middle of suburbia. And it was just crazy, It was like my parents didn't take any time to focus on our family. They were too busy. My mother was being pulled in one direction. I can see it in hindsight. It's like my grandmother on my mother's side. She, the more I think about it, she was kind of awful because she'd say these horrible things about my father. And I'm wondering if that's what led him down the path he did. There was nothing positive. It was always negativity and always sickness. My grandmother was constantly sick, always in the hospital, always asking my mother for help, dragging us to her to take care of her. After my grandfather died, right, my grandmother, we lived with my grandmother that summer. And, You know, and we would be up till all hours. I mean, my grandmother would keep us up. We'd watch, you know, the late show. Now, of course, I talked about this. I mean, when I was a kid, I had very little structure. But, and that's a really a bad thing. But I was up all hours of the night. I mean, I watched Mary Hartman on the original run. And I stayed up watching the late movie. Many times I'd be up till 3 o'clock in the morning. And on school nights, and I'd be down at my grandparents, my grandmother's house. She had just, you know, she had lost her husband. But she relied on us too much. It would be, even when school started, she would call at 9 o'clock at night, let's go to the diner, and I'll pay. We'll get you food, right? And my mother would drag me and my sister and my, you know, brother, and if, you know, he was actually a little older. He sometimes didn't go, but he would drag us. We'd be at the diner till midnight, you know, getting a cheese sandwich from my grandmother because she was lonely. You know, that's irresponsible. And I sort of resent that because I can picture my parents listening to this. And if you are, I don't, you know, if you feel bad, I'm sorry. But you know what it was like. And, you know, and I really think you're irresponsible to do that. I'm going to go get my tea. Hold on. Hi. So I'm back. This is not the beat up my mother and father, and because it is Mother's Day, so I guess beating up my mother. But I wanted to just say, is like, you know, you have these images of what Mother's Day is. Oh, thank you, Mother, and stuff, da, da, da. And I'm grateful that I was born, right? At the same time, you know, the people who are responsible for me, I mean, they did, I guess, the best they could, right? I mean, and that, you know, I'm sure there's other people just like me out there. But can't I just bitch about it? I mean, I was so depressed this morning. I was thinking about my mother. I called her. I said, wished her happy birthday. I mean, happy Mother's Day. And I love my mother. I really do. The same time, we're talking, and it's like one complaint after another about things. It's like, there's never any kind of, in my family, it's just like, it's like an uphill battle to be positive, to make a goal and to achieve it. Any kind of advancement was, you know, frowned upon. I mean, I was looked at, so I did well in school, you know, and people were, you know, in the family were, oh, that's good, but not really. Oh, you can't do that. You can't go to college. And I went to college. And it's like, you know, you had to fight through so much. Now, of course, I didn't finish college because, you know, I think I've told you about poverty. I mean, other things happened. We're living at my grandmother's house. This is after our house, you know, fell apart, basically, and had to be sold. Then she died. And, you know, we had to fight, you know, to find a place on our own. And I think I've indicated this before. It's like, you know, I was responsible. I was the one who had to, you know, pay for, who had to work and, you know, support my mother and my sister. And I don't regret it. At the same time, I just want to, can I bitch about things? I'm not looking down. I'm not trying to go back and complain about these things. I really am not. I really am not. I just, sometimes I think about it, it makes me depressed. But I have to change the way I approach these things, you know. I shouldn't let things bother me so much, right? And I'm trying to get rid of that negativity, which is my family's, which is my gift from the family. So anyway, happy Mother's Day.
What's cooking? That's right, now for the cooking portion of the latest show.
Welcome to the cooking portion of the latest show. Hi, this is Kenty. As if it were somebody else, right? You know, we have our, the way we do things. But anyway, here's a recipe. A friend of mine, we went out with John last night for his birthday. We took him out to a restaurant, and one of our friends, she brought, she knows I like cakes, baking cakes, and, you know, all the old-fashioned recipes. So she gave me this recipe called Wonder Chocolate Cake. Now, I read it, and it reminded me of Crazy Cake. And actually, when I was talking to my other friend Diane, she said that, yes, it is the same thing. But anyway, here's the cake. Wonder Chocolate Cake. It makes 1 8-inch round cake. And so here it is, okay? Sift into the ungreased cake pan, okay? 1.5 cups of flour, 1 cup of sugar, 3 tablespoons of cocoa, 1 teaspoon of soda, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Make 3 holes in dry ingredients, and into the first hole, pour 6 tablespoons of melted shortening or cooking oil. Into the second hole, put 1 tablespoon of vinegar. Into the last hole, put 1 teaspoon of vanilla. Pour over all 1 cup of cold water. Stir with a fork until all ingredients are thoroughly mixed. Bake at 350 for 25 minutes. Frost in pan when cool. So that's the Wonder Chocolate Cake. I'm going to make it today for Johnny. And so what's neat about this is that, you know, you mix it right in the pan and bake it right in there. So I'll let you know how it is.
Hello, I'm Joe G.
You're a bet kisser.
From the audio blog Bored Beyond Belief. And when I'm not busy ruminating about Christian fundamentalists taking over the United States,
you need a Holy Ghost enema right up your rear end.
I spend my relaxing time listening to Kenty on The Flatus Show. Why, like you are right now.
A time to be reaping, a time to be sowing. The green leaves of summer are calling me home. It was good to be young then, in the season of plenty, when the catfish were jumping as high as the sky. A time just for planting, a time just for plowing, a time to be courting a girl of your own. 'Twas so good to be young then, to be close to the earth and stand by your wife at the moment of birth. A time to be reaping, a time to be sowing. The green leaves of summer are calling me home. It was good to be young then, with the sweet smell of apples and the owl in the pine tree, all winking his eye. A time just for planting, a time just for plowing, a time just for living, a place for to die. 'Twas so good to be young then, to be close to the earth. Now the green leaves of summer are calling me home.
To bodybuilders. Okay, kids, so you know that I'm interested in exercising and in bodybuilding and stuff like that. And there is a lot of information on the internet. And I say information, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I mean, there's a lot of good information and there's a lot of bad information. And of course, there's those magazines out there, which you have to take with a grain of salt. Because for me, I'm not, you know, looking to be a professional bodybuilder, but I want to have the best body. I'm working on having the best body, okay? And I think I know I can do it, you know? And the thing with the magazines, though, let me just say this, is their workouts are not practical for you and I, you know, because we have full-time jobs. We're not full-time bodybuilders. We just want our bodies to look good, you know? And for the most part, these professional bodybuilders today are, you know, are pharmaceutically enhanced. Okay, I just flated there. So let me tell you about two bodybuilders which I really admire. And I found them doing a search. Now, they're well known. Okay, first one is Frank Zane. Frank Zane was a three-time Mr. Olympia winner. He won that title 3 years in a row, 77, 78, and 79. And, you know, I was looking at his younger pictures. He is totally hot. He's married to his wife, Christine. But Frank Zane is one of the hottest guys you will have ever seen, let me tell you. So you have Frank Zane, right? But he's 65 now, I think, right? He's 65. Winter of 07, he's 65. He still looks hot. I would do him in a minute. So what I'm thinking, so I looked at his website, and he really has this holistic way of keeping his body in, you know, good shape, you know? So I like it. You know, doesn't seem damaging at all. Because, you know, a lot of bodybuilders have problems with their joints because of the way they lift, and they're always at the, 0% body fat. And, you know, you can't live that way. You need fat in your body and stuff like that. But, Frank Zane is amazing. His website is frankzane.com, I guess. I have it's on my webpage, theflatedshow.blogspot.com. You can take a look. So I was on his page, and he sells these audio tapes, you know, they're CDs, of motivational, they're motivational audio tapes. And there's also this series called Train with Zane, and each CD tells you how to do your workout, you know, goes right through the workout in 50 minutes. Which is like the perfect time to do a workout. It's, you know, 3 days a week. So I bought them. I bought a few of these CDs. And they're really terrific, let me tell you. They're really terrific. He's really into meditation and relaxation. And he does a really fine job guiding you to relaxation and motivating and sending in motivation. So I recommend that my listeners go to frankzane.com. Yeah, it is frankzane.com. Frank, FRANKZANE. And go look at that and get, you know, look at his webpage. Oh, hold on. Okay, back here. Frank Zane. Where was I? So go to Frank Zane and check it out. He has a great website. And I want to buy his DVD. It's really interesting because he talks about how it's so important to stretch properly between sets. So if you're doing like your chest presses or whatever, you know, stretch your chest between the sets. And according to the CDs I bought, he generally has two sets of one exercise and like three exercises per body part, which is about right. So Calvin, I don't know if I answered this. I'll try not to answer it. because I'm doing this first. But Calvin asked about, you know, like, you know seven exercises. How many do you do? You know, do three, right? Then you can switch them around because, you know, you would do – the reason why you want to know so many different exercises is because you're going to have a – you're going to set up a program that which you'll you know, work out for a month or two, and then you'll switch. You know, you'll do the same program but switch the exercises because you need to, you know, fool your muscle into growing, basically. You know, I don't know what they call what that's called, but it's, your muscle will stop growing after a certain time. It will get used to the same thing, so you have to change it up. So yeah, he is really great, Frank Zane, and I recommend you go and buy up all his products at his website. I'll be right back. I'm back, so where was I? Oh, anyway, bodybuilding. Yeah, it's good to know all the different exercises, but you know, you don't do them all the time, okay? It's just good to know. It's basically really, really important that you're doing the exercises correctly, which I found out. So this is just a little section on Frank Zane. And the second one is Jim Morris, J-I-M-M-O-R-I-S. He's a bodybuilder too. And his website is Jim Morris, like G-Y-M-M-O-R-R-I-S. He's on my webpage links. He is really good too. He's 71. You should see these guys. I wish I want to look that good when I'm 65 and 71. And which means I have to just really, you know, do well now, right? At 43, you know? So it's really, really something else. You should see them. They're really terrific. But anyway, you know, Frank Zane, let me get back to Frank Zane real quick. If you look at Frank Zane's physique, right? He is apparently one of the smallest guys to win the Mr. Olympia. He was 180 pounds, and he had the smallest waist of any of the Mr. Olympias. And he was really apparently going for the Steve Reeves look. I mean, really chiseled and, you know, perfect proportions, right? And he looks that way. I mean, he's really, really great. And he still looks great at 65. I'm looking at these pictures because I have his latest magazine. He has a magazine called Building the Body. And the front cover is him posing at 65. He looks really terrific. But inside, they talk about the Mr. Olympia 2007. Jay Cutler, he won this year. You look at him, he's like a brick shithouse, you know? He's solid muscle. It's unnatural. Unnatural. The muscle. You should see these guys in the, you know, who are posing. They're unnatural. They look unnatural. You know, it's, I can't imagine, you know, what these new guys are, how you can live, you know, with the look. With that look, I mean, it's like, it's not pleasant to look at. Frank Zane is pleasant to look at. Well, I'll tell you. Oh, man. I want to look like Frank Zane. So that's my goal, to look like Frank Zane. Man, I mean, here's a picture of him when he's 41. I do not look like that at all. I mean, well, clearly I don't look like that at all. If I was, I'd probably be somewhere else in life. I don't know. But, yeah. Yeah, check him out. Frank Zane, I like him. I like him a lot. I like his philosophy. And there's a couple books he has out there, too. So I want to get those. So I'll let you know more as I explore Frank Zane and his what he has to offer. So I recommend him to you, all of my listeners. Okay. Oh, and also check out Jim Morris. They're both people that we should be. I can't get over this guy's body. They're all people that we should look up to. Okay.
I remember long years ago when we met. Somehow that romance, so tender, lives in my memory yet. Down the lane with you again we and love once more. There we dream beside a stream and open memory's door. Hand in hand, 'neath a peaceful sky, we'll recall happy days gone by. Dreams keep blending, never ending. Down the lane with you. Though years have gone, I'm recalling days when our love dreams came true. Love lingers on, so enthralling, calling me back, dear, to you. Down the lane with you again we live and love once more. There we dream beside a stream and open memory's door. Hand in hand, 'neath a peaceful sky, we'll recall happy days gone by. Dreams keep blending, never ending. Down the lane with you.
Evangelical socialists. Hi, kids. This is Kenty again. As you already know. But anyway, listen, I found this book, as I always do. I found a lot of books. It's from 1918. It's called The Gospel for the Working World by Harry F. Ward. Harry F. Ward was, you know, a church guy, evangelical, from the turn of the century. And he was concerned about the plight of American workers. And there's a great images in the book here. I want to scan some of them in the computer. I think they're really terrific. But I want to read something here. It's from his chapter called The Pay Envelope. Who gets the surplus? The greatest reason why so many of the workers have not enough to live on is because others have too much. The increased wealth of the nation is not available to increase the life of the people. In 1896, SPAR showed that 88% of the people had less than 65% of the income. In 1910, King proved that the same number had only 62% of the income. Spahr showed that 1.6% of the people had 10.8% of the income. King says that the same proportion now has 19% of the income. The Federal Commission on Industrial Relations divides the people of this country into three sections. The rich, who constitute 2% of the population and own 60% of the wealth. The middle class, constituting 33% of the population and owning 35% of the wealth. The poor, who make up 65% of the population and own 5% of the wealth. The largest private fortune in the United States equals the aggregate wealth of 2.5 million of those classed as poor. King concludes that 2% of the people own considerably more property than the rest of the population, and that most of the wealth is in possession of 1/5, while 4/5 must content themselves with the scraps from Dives' table. Wages and philanthropy. A weekly market letter concerning investment reports that a certain company, which has been paying from 25 to 57% dividends in recent years, is paying this year nearly 100% on the entire capitalization after increasing it 250% by an additional issue of stock without cost. A pastor reports that this company is paying its men from 28 to 39 cents per hour for a 48-hour week. The skilled American workers averaging 36 cents. This year, they have had a 10% bonus, but even after that, their income does not measure up to an efficiency standard of family living. Yet this company does some first-class welfare work for its employees, and I use quotes. A similar discrepancy between profits and wages is evident for a number of leading corporations during war prosperity. A German iron and steel works, with a capital of 26 million marks, made a net profit in 1916-1917 of over 17 million marks, paying a dividend of 24%. Some contrasts. In some of the industries where girls are being paid less than a living wage, officials are receiving salaries of $50,000 to $100,000 a year. Does this indicate an attempt to answer justly the question, what should be paid to brains? You say this is a deeper question. Some of those same industries have recently paid dividends running all the way from 30 to 70%. Does this indicate an attempt to answer justly the question, how much should go to capital and how much to productive energy? The average wage in 1914 in the manufacturing plants of this country, including all officials, was about $670 per capita. The value of the finished product per capita was about $3,000, allowing a liberal estimate for the value of raw materials and all other overhead expenses, it appears that the workers, including the managers, received only about 40% of what they added to their actual labor to the value of the raw material. The rest was profit, claimed as the earnings of capital. Nearing has shown that there is a larger part of the income of this country going to property owned than is going to service rendered. The fact of ownership now counts for more in this country than the fact of labor, including brains as well as hands. About $6 billion now goes to the account of property. This sum would raise to the efficiency standard of living 12 million families whose average expenditure is $500 or less. The question for religion. Here is an obvious condition of economic injustice. What does it mean for the missionary agencies that are seeking to help the suffering poor? In their work, they are now brought face to face with the ancient fact of exploitation, the time-honored custom of the powerful to make the weaker serve them, to live wholly or in part off their labor. In such a situation, our religion has ever had an aggressive message. The Hebrew law attempted to protect the producer against the possessor. The prophets thundered the message of God against those who wrought injustice. They cried their woes upon those who built their houses by unrighteousness, who oppressed the hireling in his wages, who built up their large estates and their fine mansions by encroaching upon the rights of the free people and impoverishing their lives. Woe unto them that join house to house, that lay field to field. They build up Zion with blood, cries Micah with bitterness. Amos proclaims, the fierce judgment of eternal justice upon those who stir up violence and robbery in their palaces, who trample upon the poor and take extractions from them of wheat, who swallow up the needy and cause the poor of the land to fail. All the prophets declared that the rich could find no acceptance for their worship in the temple as long as these conditions obtained. This message Jesus fulfilled when he scourged with his condemnation the scribes and Pharisees because they devoured widows' houses with their mortgages and laid burdens upon the poor which they themselves would not lift by religious requirements which added to their profit and the impoverishment of the workers. Is it then a part of the missionary duty of the follower of Jesus to carry his teachings into the working world until injustice is removed? You know, I find this passage really interesting. I mean, not passage. The evangelicals. You know, there's different ways of looking at evangelicals, okay? I think that the idea of the whole definition of an evangelical today has been changed from what it meant originally. Many evangelicals from the Civil War on were people who wanted to bring about social justice. You know, evangelicals were against slavery. Evangelicals, you know, were for, you know, living wages, you know, fighting for the, you know, poor and looking and trying to expose injustices. Today, the evangelicals were bamboozled by fundamentalists. These fundamentalists, you know, I was going about the South, and I don't mean that to be a personal affront to people living in the South. When I talk about the South, I'm talking about the Confederacy, the idea of the slave ownership. Those are the fundamentalists I'm talking about. These people, it's the mindset, okay? If you think for 1 minute that slavery is a good thing or should happen, you have another thing coming. Your brain is addled, you know? It just bugs me, you know. When I think of fundamentalists, I think of that coming out of the South after they were defeated. You know, this entrenchant idea of dominionist thinking, you know. And they really don't care about religion. They care about power. And it's not all Southerners, okay? So don't get me wrong here. Don't misquote me. That's how I view it, okay? So I think that, you know, today, you know, evangelicals are worried about abortion, whatever, homosexuality. They're not concerned about real social justice issues, you know. And it's because the fundamentalist groups have sort of swayed them. But I think that Americans are smarter than that, even the evangelicals, is that they're going to wake up, you know, and away from this horrible dream. But, you know, I don't know what to say. But anyway, but that's what I have to say. Okay.
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
Another 5-minute mystery. Late afternoon in the sheriff's office at the old City Hall building, which also serves as county seat and police headquarters for a group of small northwestern towns.
Well, I tell you, Charlie, that air old trout down by the railroad bridge made a fool out of me for the last time.
Think he'll take that new fly, huh, Sheriff?
Ain't a fish alive could turn down this spotted hackle I tied on last night. Mm-hmm. As soon as the sun gets a little lower in the sky, I'm gonna...
Hello. Yes, it's police headquarters. What? Down by the river? I'll tell the sheriff right away.
Hey, what's the trouble, Charlie? You look a little peaked there. What's the matter?
It's them two city fellas. They was fishing out behind the old Johnson farm. Now one of them's dead.
I left Uncle Bill's body just the way I found it, Sheriff. My name is Harold Kendall. His name was Olson.
Yeah, it looks like he tripped on the roots at the edge of this steep bank and smashed his head against them rocks down by the water.
I can't believe Uncle Bill is really dead.
Yeah, well, ain't no use letting the body hang there by its feet. Doc Simpson, the coroner, is on his way out here. Now, easy, Charlie. Yep, careful of them there roots.
Looks of this blood all over his face and on his shirt, he must have skinned himself up pretty bad.
Nope. All the blood come from this one gash here inside of his head. Ooh. Hey, you say this man was your uncle?
Yes, I'm what you might call his favorite nephew. Yeah. He was a bachelor. Didn't like most of his relatives.
Yeah. Where was you when he fell?
Across the river, about 50 yards up. You can see the place from here. When I saw Uncle Bill fall...
Yeah, you saw him fall.
Yes, I didn't think it was serious at first. Uncle Bill was such a good fisherman. He was getting ready to cast his line. He walked up to the edge of the bank and...
Let's see... Well, that'd put his back to the sun.
That's right. Then before he could cast, he seemed to stumble and fall forward. After he fell, he just hung there with his feet tangled in the roots and his head against that sharp rock where
he... you were so careful to put it. You're under arrest, Kendall, for murder.
How does the sheriff know it was deliberate murder? Do you know the clue? We'll have the answer in a moment, but first... Solution to our mystery.
But I told you exactly what happened.
Keep your eye on him, Charlie.
You seem awful sure this fella done it, Sheriff. I don't see how you...
Well, he lied to us twice, Charlie. And the way I figure, he stands to inherit some money from that uncle of his. That is, providing he got away with this here murder, which he didn't. It was easy enough for him to hit his uncle on the head with a rock and then rig his feet in them roots to look like he tripped and fell. Ah, but he made two mistakes. The first was when he told us his uncle was a good fisherman. No good fisherman would walk up to a stream with his back to the sun and his shadow falling on the water he intended to fish in. When he told us his uncle died hanging head down, I knew he was lying. There's blood all over his uncle's face and shirt. And blood don't run uphill any more than that there river does.
William Cullen Bryant, The Battlefield. Once this soft turf, this rivulet's sands, were trampled in a hurrying crowd, and fiery hearts and armed hands encountered in the battle cloud. Ah, never shall the land forget how gushed the lifeblood of her brave, gushed warm with hope and courage yet upon the soil they fought to save. Now all is calm and fresh and still, alone the chirp of flitting bird, and talk of children on the hill, and bell of wandering kine are heard. No solemn host goes trailing by, the black-mouthed gun in staggering wane. Men start not at the battle cry, oh, be it never again. Soon rested those who fought, be thou who minglest in the harder strife, for truths which we receive not now, thy warfare only ends with life. A friendless warfare, lingering long through weary day and weary year, a wild and many-weaponed throng, hang on thy front and flank and rear. Yet nerve thy spirit to the proof, and blench not at thy chosen lot. The timid good may stand aloof, the sage may frown, yet faint thou not. Nor heed the shaft too surely cast, the foul and hissing bolt of scorn, for with thy side shall dwell at last the victory of endurance born. Truth, crushed to earth, shall rise again. The eternal years of gods are hers, but error, wounded, writhes in pain and dies among his worshippers. Yea, though thou lie upon the dust, when they who helped thee flee in fear, die full of hope and manly trust, like those who fell in battle here, another hand thy sword shall wield, another hand thy standard wave, till from the trumpet's mouth is pealed the blast of triumph o'er thy grave. You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
A thank you for that check that you got. Hopefully you did, because I'm kind of embarrassed to even ask her if she got it. So let's just keep me posted. Thank you.